Chamberlain versus Goldberg, 25-10933. Mr. Streisfeld here for the appellants. Mr. Dix here for the appellee. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, Your Honor. Bingo. Perfectly.
Very well. Okay, so whenever you're ready.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Jonathan Streisfeld. I have the pleasure of representing Todd and Kelly Chamberlain on behalf of their son, Clark. Certainly, the most important thing is for me to answer some questions that you have today, and I very much appreciate your granting oral argument to us. So let me begin with the focus being on the misappropriation of $100 million from special needs trusts. That misappropriation led to the Chamberlains filing a class action complaint against non-debtors, people who are complicit, in our view, in the misappropriation of these special needs trust assets. From our perspective, we purposely avoided the automatic bankruptcy stay, which brings us here today.
When you say we purposefully avoided, do you mean, because I think, it's funny, I thought the other side would have said this is an end run around the bankruptcy stay, and it sounds like you're saying this was an end run around the bankruptcy stay.
No, that's not what I meant. I wrote this early on, and I thought it was clear. By avoiding the bankruptcy stay, we didn't go after the debtor. We didn't go after the debtor's officers and directors in bringing a class action. We filed claims alleging torts by other people, those other people being the non-debtors, that violated independent duties that we allege existed in favor of these special needs trust beneficiaries, and/or aided and abetted the debtor in the misappropriation of the assets.
Well, you actually raise one of my questions, which is it does seem your case is proceeding on behalf of the beneficiaries, but isn't it the center? I guess I'm wondering, what is the role then of the center, and why isn't this really a case for the center that was responsible, right, for managing these funds?
Well, for one thing, the center was involved in the misappropriation. So as we've argued in our briefs, we believe that the center lacks standing. There's an impari delecto issue, which could saddle the beneficiaries who have the property interest in these assets that were taken. Those assets are not bankruptcy estate assets because the center is a service company. The obligation of these trusts to the center was to pay service fees in favor of making sure that the assets were safeguarded and involved in the investment direction of these assets. Some of the assets, and I think it's important because I know that there's this commingling issue that the Appley brings up.
Yes, how do you get around the commingling issue? And we did ask you to address the case from our predecessor court, N. Ray Kennedy and Cohen.
Yes. So I was hoping there might be a specific question.
How do you get around it?
Okay. So first and foremost, I think that the case, in this particular case, we're not addressing the need to trace the assets once that they were misappropriated, because the loaning of the money and where it went does not impact our claims. And looking at this case,
what do you mean it doesn't impact your claim? So do you disagree that the assets were commingled?
We haven't seen all of the evidence because we didn't really get very far at all in our class action. We didn't even get to litigate the motion to dismiss because the trustee swooped in and filed this motion saying we violated the automatic stay and we stopped. I can tell you this.
Well, I guess, have you been able to trace the assets specifically from your clients? Have you been able to identify any specific assets?
Well, for one thing, for Clark's special needs trust, he had an individual special needs trust. So his assets were to be placed only in that trust. There was a small amount of assets that, and we still need to find out from the bad actors in this case how it came that some of his assets wound up in a pooled special needs trust.
So they were commingled?
A small portion of it. Now, the debtor has represented to the court that that all of these assets were commingled after the fact. But one of the things that I noticed about Kennedy is Kennedy seemed to be a claim against the debtor trying to get money. In this particular case, as I introduced at the beginning of our argument, we are not seeking money from the debtor. If we were seeking money from the debtor and we couldn't figure out which money was ours arising out of a Ponzi scheme, then perhaps, then I understand this concept of having to trace it. But
isn't
not,
it the same, if I'm understanding the process correctly, even though you're not going after the debtor, the money you are going after could end up being money that the debtor would use to pay off a bigger pool of creditors. So that still seems problematic.
Well, one of our concerns has always been that the broader group of creditors that are not special needs trust beneficiaries should not have an opportunity to have their claims satisfied using this money that was not the debtor's money to begin with. It's somebody else's money. It's these trust assets. And so when we look at the bankruptcy code...
So then you would be, even though you disagree with how the money is classified, you do agree that there is a claim to this money by others that complicates the situation in terms of the commingling point Judge Kidd made.
From our perspective, the special needs trusts were all funded in a clear way with a different amount of money. There's 2,000 some odd special needs trusts that were impacted by the scheme. Those were all booked as to the dollar amounts. Then we learn over a decade, unbeknownst to anybody, because there was this scheme to prevent anybody from knowing the status of the assets, $100 million got misappropriated. The center then makes a loan to one of these other defendants that we sued. That loan is not the genesis of why we're here. We're here because the misappropriation happened. The Chapter 11 trustee said, well, the debtor, even before the Chapter 11 trustee was appointed, said this was a misappropriation of assets. There was no authorization to do this. Let me add another fact. We were stayed, prevented from doing this. Subsequent to that, the Chapter 11 trustee orchestrated the filing of a class action against one of the same defendants, American Momentum Bank, that we sued. Named plaintiffs in that class action are two other special needs trusts bringing the same claim individually on behalf of this class of creditors. Presumably the Chamberlains are in that class. So why is it good for them to do that, and why is it bad for us to do that? It would have been fine for both of us to do that, and that's why we're here appealing today, because this is not an asset of the bankruptcy estate. These are assets of these special needs trusts. The trustee, very clearly under Section 541(d)(1) of the bankruptcy code, there's an exception. That exception is that if the trustee just has bare legal title to the trust assets, the beneficial interest in the trust belongs to these beneficiaries, including the Chamberlains, including the two named plaintiffs that are special needs trusts.
But aren't you running with this line of argument into Judge Kidd's questions about commingling and tracing and the former Fifth Circuit's case?
Well, I struggled with the case. Certainly we have an express trust in our case. That case did not involve an express trust. I looked at the cases that dealt with the commingling and the cases that dealt with the commingling subsequent to this Fifth Circuit case seemed to me to involve a claim where a particular creditor is trying to go after the debtor.
But I guess so. I'm hardly an expert, this may be stupid, but I guess I thought there were sort of two ways to think about this case. One is it is functionally a suit against the debtor. That implicates one provision of the bankruptcy code. Or you might view it as, forget about that, it is in fact a suit to recover estate property. That implicates another portion of the bankruptcy code. That's where you get into all of this stuff about tracing and commingling. So it doesn't seem to me to be a complete answer for you to say that old Fifth Circuit case doesn't matter because it ours is not a suit against the debtor. Because I think yours is, in this sort of bucket, a suit attempting to go after estate property.
So the law that we cited in our brief talks about the fact that even if the debtor had joint tortfeasors, it doesn't mean that we'd have to be suing the debtor to collect the money that was misappropriated. So as we explained, then there's two provisions, I believe, at issue, section 362A1 and 362A3. 362A1, judge, is a claim against the debtor.
Right.
We've not sued the debtor.
Okay, so let's forget about A1. Okay. Now talk to me about A3.
Okay, so then A3 is the property of the estate. Well, in order to look at A3, then you have to look at 541D1, and under 540D1, there's an exception. These are not assets of the bankruptcy estate.
Okay, so at that point, aren't you squarely in Judge Kidd's conundrum about commingling and tracing to figure out whether, in fact, these are assets of the bankruptcy estate?
Well, they would never have been assets of the bankruptcy estate because...
I get your point that at the outset, they were set up separately. But there is still the fact that you need to trace them, and there seems to be this commingling. It doesn't matter really how it was set up at the outset. What matters is, what do we know now about these assets, and are you able to disentangle it?
I feel, and I may be wrong, but I'm going to say it, from my reading of this case, the Kennedy case, I feel like the tracing is important if you're going after the debtor, as opposed to going after, say, American Momentum Bank. If we are able to successfully prove the role, just like the bankruptcy trustee is working with other beneficiaries to go after them for aiding and abetting a breach of fiduciary duty, if we're able to say that the bank had a role in the misappropriation of these assets, then we're in a position to ask the bank to pay the $100 million or whatever amount a jury would decide they're responsible for as an aider and abettor of this misappropriation of assets. So that's where I think that this lies. If the court would benefit from, you know, supplemental briefing or further analysis of this case, because I know it was important and neither of the parties cited it, and I don't think any of the parties cited any cases that subsequently directly dealt with this Kennedy case from the Fifth Circuit, we'd be happy to provide supplemental briefing.
Okay, very well. You have your rebuttal time remaining. Let's hear from the appellate.
Thank you.
May it please the court, John Dix for Michael Goldberg, the Chapter 11 trustee for the Center for Special Needs Trust Administration. Judge Kidd, directly to Kennedy and Cohen. In that case, the issue was commingling, and the issue was the plaintiff sought a constructive trust over those commingled funds. In this case, there's no dispute that the money was commingled. It is even, Your Honor, alleged in the appellant's amended complaint. There are two allegations of the appellant's amended complaint alleging that funds were commingled and that was part of the wrongdoing that they were seeking recovery for. There's also no dispute that the appellants in the amended complaint are seeking the imposition of a constructive trust.
Well, that you started with commingling, but what's about the traceable part? They're saying, just throw a number out there, $100 million. We know the $100 million was not a part of the debtor's assets. Why can't we just segregate that amount and be done with it? And it's traceable. All we need to say is establish how much we are entitled to, that the money exists, and then we're done.
Yes, Your Honor. First of all, the record is undisputed that the money is not traceable. The Chapter 11 trustee, as part of its duties, hired a forensic accountant. The bankruptcy court relied on the report of the forensic accountant and specifically found that the money was not traceable. That is on review here on a clear error standard. So we'd have to go back to the bankruptcy court and find that she made a clear error in her conclusion. But again, her conclusion is supported not only by the work of a forensic accountant, but also by the allegations of the appellant's own amended complaint, where they have alleged that the funds were commingled and cannot be traced.
So then that would make it more like, even though they haven't asked for a constructive trust, essentially it would function that way if you were to put aside this $100 million, let's say.
Certainly it would, Your Honor. But to repeat myself, they did ask for a constructive trust. Two of the counts in the amended complaint were specifically seeking the imposition of a constructive trust over that money. So we are squarely within Kennedy and Cohen. And it is true that neither party addressed Kennedy and Cohen in their briefs, but the appellees, did address a Middle District case from 1985. It's the Felton Foods case, and it's the same general principle. So it's the same general principle that when you have funds over which a constructive trust is trying to be imposed, or funds that were supposed to be held in trust, if they're commingled, then they become property of the estate because they can't be traced. And the bankruptcy code and the priority schemes depend on that money and sort of that case law working its way through the bankruptcy code. That's really the point, is that the bankruptcy court ought to have, when funds can't be traced, the bankruptcy court needs the jurisdiction and the power to deal with that question and to work it through with a priority scheme. The appellant made a reference in their presentation to money being available to other creditors, and that might cause some additional harm to them. But we would submit to you that is what the bankruptcy code is for. That the priority scheme of the beneficiaries vis-a-vis the other creditors who are not beneficiaries, that's dealt with through the plan process. That is what the bankruptcy court is doing. I wanted to jump into Kennedy and Cohen because I know that was directed from the court. There are a few other points that I would like to make, though. One is that this appeal is moot. There have been developments since the order imposing the automatic stay that have rendered this appeal moot. One of those developments is that my client, the Chapter 11 trustee, has recovered a judgment. A judgment has been entered for $120 million, and that is the money that is the loan with which the appellants take issue. It's the loan that was at the heart of the amended complaint. They've been attacking the loan. We've been enforcing the loan. We have chosen to enforce the loan as a means to recover the most money that we can for the estate. But the idea that the appellants would then go and attack that loan undermines what we're able to do. And so we believe that renders it moot. It also,
can I ask you just a quick question? Because I had a question about this initially. So, with respect to mootness, is your point that the $120 million that the trustee recovered in this adversary proceeding sort of more than covers the damages that they're seeking in their class action? And is that necessarily true? Like, can we account for that equivalency? Are there appreciation factors that might cause the $120 million actually to be short? I guess I'm just trying to figure out, are we certain that the $120 million in the adversary proceeding covers their alleged damages?
Not only does it cover it, Your Honor, from a number, arithmetic perspective, it is the very same thing that they are seeking. Their complaint, if I could characterize it, is that the center had all of these trusts and then misappropriated them by giving them to its affiliates. That same giving to the affiliates, that was achieved through the loan. The loan was the vehicle by which the misappropriation that they complain about actually happened. So they call the loan fraudulent, and they say there's a loan, the $120 million was held, and then it was loaned out, and that loan is fraudulent, and we should be able to recover that $120 million. But We've taken the position, because it was more efficient and economical, and there are lots of other reasons why, we chose to enforce the loan. But it's still the same amount of money, and it's still the same thing. It's still the same res. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Okay. The appeal is also moot for a couple of other reasons. One is very interesting. Appellants mentioned that my client has filed a class action. My client has filed a class action, and in through that process, there was a mechanism called a wind-down order where individual beneficiaries were able to opt out of the class action, and the Chamberlains did not. And so the appellants themselves, as would-be lead putative representatives of this class action that they sought to bring, are now part of another class action. So even if the court were to say your class action could proceed, the main class representatives are now part of this other class action because they didn't opt out. And we believe that renders the appeal moot. The other reason, it touches on mootness, but it also touches on property of the estate. And it is another development from the middle of 2025. But through negotiations, after the $120 million judgment was rendered against Mr. Gavone, Leo Gavone, who is a named defendant in the would-be class action, Mr. Gavone assigned to my client, the Chapter 11 trustee on behalf of the bankruptcy estate, all of his equity in any company that he held. So what that means is that my client now, as the bankruptcy trustee, holds title to the companies that are also defendants in this class action. So my client, so those companies, Boston Finance Group, Boston Asset Management, the prospect funding entities, they're all named defendants in the would-be class action complaint, are now squarely property of the estate. They've become property of the estate through this assignment. And so would this complaint be able to proceed, they would be suing to try to recover from assets of the estate. In addition, Your Honor, I want to make the point that we haven't spoken about direct versus derivative claims, but the bankruptcy law is clear that my client has the authority to pursue derivative claims. Derivative claims are those that affect all of the beneficiaries, not the same arithmetically, but in the same way. So certainly the allegations in the amended complaint implicate derivative claims, which my client clearly has the authority to pursue. With that, if there are no further questions, Your Honor, I think I'll sit down.
Okay, very well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, let's hear the rebuttal. And would you address, you don't have to start the clock yet, but would you address in your rebuttal time his mootness points?
Yes, happy to. First, the first mootness question involved
$120 million recovered by
right. And so, Judge Newsom, you mentioned the appreciation. From our perspective, this money was supposed to be invested. That was the job. That was the purpose of the Special Needs Trust, not only to protect it under the Medicare laws so that the beneficiaries would have the money, but $120 million over 10 years that would have been invested doesn't mean that $120 million gets our clients made whole, as you also, I think, had the conversation with my friend. This money has not all been collected. Yes, there may have been assets that have been recovered, and great. If the enforcement of the loan is the debtor's job and the debtor is able to collect money and that offsets some of the money, then that's fine. But we have targeted others. Let's focus on American Momentum Bank, which is the defendant that's the subject of the other class action. And if we can get a judgment against them, we'll get more money for the Special Needs Trust.
And how about the his point that you are in fact, not maybe, but are members of that class?
Certainly, I respect that they're members of the class. The wind down order, we specifically included in the wind down order at paragraph 22 protection, because this wind down order was being sought at the same time our clients were trying to appeal, as I recall it, the bankruptcy judge's order that the automatic stay applied. And important, Rule 23 has to be invoked, and the opt-out process has to happen under Rule 23 under the class action, not under this wind-down order, a wind-down order that protected the rights of the Chamberlains to say that these were not assets of the estates and to proceed with their claims. If the bankruptcy stay is lifted, we would make, not lifted, if the court determines that it doesn't apply, we'll look at the current facts. We'll target the most likely defendant that would be available, which would be American Momentum Bank. This issue of derivative versus direct, there's no injury to the debtor related to the misappropriation of the assets that this class action is about, whether it's my class action or the class action that was subsequently filed. The injury is to the beneficiaries, and that's why, as we argued in our briefs, that makes the claims direct in our favor. Finally, from a policy perspective, if we had filed this lawsuit and said, the center, we don't believe it has any money, and there was no bankruptcy involved, there'd be no issue, we wouldn't be here today. But what's happening in these bankruptcy cases is that people with claims against non-debtors are being prevented from doing it on the claim that the assets are the estate, or the claim is against the debtor, but that's not what happened here. With that, thank you very much.
Okay, very well. Case is submitted. We'll move to the third case of the day, Becker.